efforts to shrink the gender gap in science, technology, engineering, and math. It's been an issue for decades, and there have been a number of national efforts to change it, but the discouraging numbers persist. Still, well into the 21st century, many science, technology, and engineering fields remain male-dominated cultures. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, even though 47% of the workforce is female, only 8% of electrical engineers are women, and only 7% of mechanical engineers. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss the reasons behind this gender gap and efforts to close it. This weekend in Castine, the American Association of University Women will focus their annual Maine conference on this issue. We'll be joined by some of the participants working hard to get more girls into STEM careers. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. While women make up 47% of the workforce, they only make up 7% of mechanical engineers. The number of women in many STEM fields, those are science, technology, engineering, and math, has risen, but there is still a staggering gender gap, a gap that is not matched in any other professional field. Today, we're going to discuss the roadblocks to closing this gap and what we can do to encourage more girls to enter STEM fields. In the studio with me, Dr. Carrie Whitaker. She teaches at Bates College and at the Coastal Studies for Girls in Freeport. She has a PhD in oceanography from the University of Rhode Island. Joining us from our Bangor studio, Dr. Dot McLean. She's on the National Board of Directors for the American Association of University Women. And Dr. Elizabeth True, Vice President of Student Affairs at Maine Maritime Academy. As always, we want to hear from you as well. What are your thoughts on the gender gap in STEM fields? Are you a woman who has worked in a STEM field? Why do you think this gender gap is so difficult to close? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Dot McLean, you know, it strikes me that some fields are far, even within STEM, have a very different kind of story than others. I think of medicine. I read recently that half of medical school graduates are women today, yet we hear these statistics about engineering, 7-8% different engineering fields. Why the difference?
Well, you're absolutely right. We're doing really well in biology and chemistry. It's the engineering and the computer science fields that we're falling behind in. And a lot of that has to do with the idea that engineering has been more aligned with men because the math and technology that's involved in that. It also grew out of like military work. So sort of the things that are aligned with men is engineering. So people think engineers, they think men. They think biologists, they can see women in that role. Computer science is sort of interesting because women really had a very large role in there as the female computers of World War II, writing ballistics manuals for the war, and were the early programmers on the ENIAC, the first computer. But somewhere along the line in around the 50s and the 60s, first women came back from the war and took those jobs. And then when it became more men were working in post-World War II, they started taking over those jobs and women declined a little bit. And they're actually still declining in computer science, which is an anomaly to us all.
Why about engineering, though? I mean, at the beginning, you said people look at engineers as men. Why?
Because a lot of the engineering are things like it could be petroleum engineering, it could be mechanical engineering, building bridges, those sorts of things that are more seen as male types of occupations, unlike medicine, where you have medicine or nursing or physical therapy, where you can see women in those fields nurturing. It's also engineering is not as easily apparent to see the social relevance of it, and a lot of women are attracted to occupations that they can see where they're really helping people and doing things. You certainly are doing that in engineering, but it's a little harder to see than you can see it in some of the other STEM fields.
Carrie Whitaker, where in life does this happen, this falling off of interest in math and science? I know it's been studied. Is it in elementary school, high school, college, or afterwards? Where do we see girls no longer want to muck around in the tide pools and figure out what's under the rocks, no longer solve logic puzzles for fun.
I think in a lot of ways it's how we teach some of these sciences, or traditionally where it's very content-based, focusing on equations, on memorization, instead of really teaching students that science is a creative act, that creative critical thinking is a discourse that requires collaboration and communication. And I think that's changing, but in earlier years, I think really the focus on memorization and equations, we lose a lot of students in that way. And then there's stereotype threat. You know, seeing people in STEM careers that are primarily men, women don't see themselves in that position.
They just can't picture themselves when they tour that lab or go on that research vessel. It may be subtle, but they may not be able to picture themselves there with the kind of people they're meeting.
Right. And I think, you know, the role of mentorship is really important and wonderful to connect younger people in their career, undergraduates or even high school students, middle school students, with successful women in STEM fields, allows them to really see themselves in that position and can be really empowering. So,
Elizabeth True, I know that many, if not most, Maine Maritime Academy majors are STEM-based fields, several engineering majors. What is the experience of Maine Maritime Academy? What is the proportion of male to female students, and how's that changed over the years?
Well, we are mostly STEM programs, and again, focusing on engineering as well as the sciences, as well as technology. We do have about 15% women at this point. It has been slow to get to that point, and then has really kind of steadied at that point, and it's hard to break that barrier to get a larger group of women interested. We have also, in addition to the stereotypes, we're looking at careers in the maritime industry, which has been traditionally male. And some women have trouble, some girls have trouble thinking, how am I going to have home and family if I'm at sea? So we have an additional challenge, and we try to help the students understand there's all sorts of different things they can do with our degree, and but there also are ways that they can go to sea as well.
What kind of things is Maine Maritime Academy doing in Maine high schools to try to convince more young women to consider a career that Maine Maritime Academy would prepare them for? And I must mention that Maine Maritime Academy grads have some of the highest salaries in the country. So, why is that not attractive to more young girls?
And that's really it. We want to have women having that same experience to the high placement rates, the high job salaries, the job security, and all of those exciting things that their male peers have. And our female graduates do have fantastic careers, and they come back and talk to our students. But you're right. We need to get the girls to understand about it. So the reason why we're here today is actually because we're going to be hosting AEUW's state convention on our campus today and tomorrow. And so we're also partnering with them to offer a STEM exploration conference for high school girls. We're really targeting 9th and 10th graders, and they'll be on campus tomorrow interacting with the women who are here for AEW and also in a variety of workshops and labs to learn about careers in STEM while it's early enough that they can make those decisions and get excited about a career and make sure their high school path and coursework will prepare them for that career. We also do bring a lot of high school students in Maine on what we call Discovery Voyage, where they come to campus for a day and have lab experiences and then do go out on the water on our research vessels and actually do a little bit of scraping of the ocean floor and see what they come up with. And that often piques their interest as well.
Dot, how much is this an issue of getting girls interested in STEM fields, or how much of it is an issue of the workplace for grown women who have these degrees? How much, I've read so much about the hostile tech culture that you alluded to earlier. I think there are a lot of stories about women in labs feeling discriminated against. Is that the bigger problem here than 8th graders being interested in how to set off a rocket or, decode some genetic material?
Well, it's really both problems, because the first thing, the most critical thing, is to spark the interest of a girl when she's young, to show her role models, to show her what these careers are all about, to get her interested. You get them interested, you get them into college, and depending on the college, sometimes they don't have the best experience, again, depending on what subject they're taking. Often if they're in a computer science class, for example, they feel sometimes they're a little behind the boys, because boys tend to be gamers in general, and we're stereotyping here, but in general, so they have a little bit of exposure to computers. So when they get into an entry-level class at college, they may be a little more knowledgeable than the women in the classroom, and then they feel like they're not well prepared. So Harvey Mudd College made to address this, they put two levels of entry-level computer science, and they were able to, with that and a few other changes, increase their number of women graduates in computer science from 12% to over 40%. So if they can get through, so that next hurdle is getting through college and feeling the support of the department and getting through there, and then you get into the workplace. And it's true that in a lot of the, especially in the engineering, the computer areas, because they're so male dominated, that a lot of women report that they get lack of support from their supervisor. They sometimes feel they don't consider their ideas, they're demeaning, and there's a lot of uncivil action towards them as far as discrimination and condescension and condescending to them and those sorts of things. So you get what is called a leaky pipeline. So these women make it, they get into these workplaces, they don't have a good experience, they don't feel valued, and they leave those STEM fields. And it's not that they're not working anymore, they go to other fields. They go out of STEM and into other fields. And that's the worst possible thing that could happen, because then you lose your role models.
Carrie, you're trained as a biological oceanographer. Do I have that right?
Yes.
What is oceanography like? I had the idea that, boy, oceanography would be one of those fields that was an exception. There would be a lot of women interested in studying that. But you say not really.
Traditionally, it's really been a male-dominated field. There's a lot of physics and chemistry involved in oceanography. I see a lot more women gravitating towards biological oceanography. But we have in the field some really inspirational women. Sylvia Earle is one of them. She was one of the first female oceanographers that really broke through the glass ceiling and has been really inspirational. And among my colleagues, I definitely gravitate towards those really successful, inspiring women in the field. So it's improving, and it's not as the dearth of women is not really there for oceanography as it is for things like computer sciences.
Let me ask you this. So you teach at Bates College, so you have young women in your classrooms. Do you see that leaky pipeline beginning then? Do you see girls changing their minds about their majors at 19, 20, 21 years old?
You know, I see some women that I can really, young women that I can really connect with and inspire towards those fields. And I think it's in how those sciences are taught. I'm a really big proponent of experiential education and being intentional about providing leadership skills within STEM education. I think there still is a risk of losing undergraduates in classes that are taught with that traditional culture that focuses heavily towards like a male-dominated discipline.
Elizabeth True, I know that Maine Maritime has been co-ed for a generation now. I was friends with the woman who was your first valedictorian, who is a female, and she's about my age, or was about my age. And I want to ask about the experience of the last few decades. How have the women who have graduated from Maine Maritime and gone into careers in maritime engineering fared?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Deb Dempsey, because she has been a wonderful mentor to our students throughout the years. And that is something we find is our alumni are really committing to making sure that the women students have those networking connections that the men have had for years. And so we actually have a Women on the Water conference for all the maritime academies, and Deb is always there speaking, and she's always bringing someone, and we often have alumni panels. And so they're really helping with that. You know, Deb did to break a lot of barriers, and now more of those barriers are being broken, and women are seeing more other women on ships with them, for example. And so I think that it's a fantastic network we're building up. And I was just thinking of something in addition to the mentoring, and Carrie talking about it. One of the important things is to have women faculty, women teachers in the high school, not teaching history and English like I had, and all men teaching the math and science, but making sure that we hire terrific women to teach, to be mentors, and to be role models for women at the college and high school levels.
You know, before we go any farther, Dr. McLean, I want to put down any notion that boys have greater aptitude for science and math, because I understand that the testing, if anything, shows that girls are even stronger in some cases earlier in their lives.
Yeah, there's absolutely no gender-based difference in your ability to do math or science. And if you look at the courses that students take in high school and their SAT scores, there really is no difference. What there is a little bit of a difference is in high school is boys tend to take AP courses in things like physics and calculus, whereas girls will take it in history and English. And so that sort of starts the issue. But they're certainly both equally qualified. It's an individual thing whether you're good in math and science, not whether you're a boy or a girl.
You know, and I'm thinking, too, I want to expand this just a little bit, Carrie. This is beyond a girls and women issue here in Maine, isn't it? There may be parts of the country where we're talking about solely let's get more girls into the sciences. But in Maine, we're talking about getting more kids into the sciences, aren't we? I mean, I read somewhere that Maine has the lowest medical school aspiration rate of any state, that fewer kids in Maine in a survey said they wanted to become doctors. And that's true for other sciences as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think getting a diversity of perspectives, ethnic perspectives, socioeconomic perspectives into the sciences is extremely important, especially for the interdisciplinary challenges that we're facing as a society right now. And getting people on board with science as a creative discipline, one that requires a diversity of strengths and leadership skills, is something that we can incorporate as educators, I really believe, and getting people inspired about the role of STEM in society. And I think it's in making those connections between STEM fields and our real-world problems is one way to really get all kinds of students on board, girls, boys, from all walks of life.
Well, we have so many people calling in wanting to take part in this conversation about getting girls and women, more girls and women into the STEM fields, closing the gender gap. We'll have those calls when we come back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the University of Maine School of Law, located in Portland, committed to justice and leadership in a changing world, mainelaw.maine.edu. And the Maine Association of Nonprofits, uniting and strengthening the nonprofit sector through management training and advocacy, nonprofitmaine.org.
The forces that shape everything in the universe are the same as the forces that are shaping who we are and what our identity is.
On the next Radiolab,
xenon,
hydrogen,
carbon,
iron,
uranium and thorium,
lithium, cesium and plutonium,
helium,
elements.
They literally move mountains.
And us.
I mean, gratitude is like not even the word.
That's on the next Radiolab.
You can join us for Radio Lab tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock and Tuesday evening at 11 right here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Radio would like to remind all teachers and educators that there is a valuable educational resource you may be interested in. Our PBS Learning Media Service contains extensive digital and classroom-ready resources. This free K-12 educational resource can be found online at mpbn.net and is aligned with Common Core and national standards. PBS Learning Media, online at mpbn.net.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, getting more women and girls into STEM fields. In the studio with me, Dr. Carrie Whitaker is a Bates College professor and teacher at the Coastal Studies for Girls in Freeport. She's also a biological oceanographer. Joining us from our Bangor studio, Dr. Dot McLean, who is on the board of directors of the American Association of University of Women and has... Did I say that right? University Women, and she has chaired the STEM Task Force for the AAUW, and Dr. Elizabeth True is Vice President of Student Affairs at Maine Maritime Academy. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Michelle LaForge, who is head of school at Baxter Academy. She's also former head of the math department at Freeport High School. Thanks for calling in, Michelle.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Baxter's a few years old now, STEM charter high school. How many of the students at Baxter are girls?
It has varied over the 3 years, but it has, hovered around sort of 35% to 40% at the most. So it's always been 35-65 or so, girls to boys.
And does that reflect the, I know it's a lottery. Is the lottery, and who ends up there?
It's a public school, so it is absolutely, we choose names literally out of a bingo hopper. Like, we run a lottery. And so getting more girls in this school or any public school where run on a lottery system will depend on more girls applying. Like, if we can add to that giant pool of kids that for whom we're picking places, that would be one of the ways that, to make that change. But otherwise, no, it's nothing like, we're not picking and choosing. This is not a private school.
The girls who are coming to Baxter have already pre-selected themselves as being interested in science and math. What do you do to encourage and support that interest as they go through their teenage years?
Well, I think it makes a difference that how we have this school with this explicit, deliberate support for any student in STEM fields and girls in particular. But, there's still a lot of institutional and structural bias that exists in our system, teachings in school, from examples and textbooks to, the sound of girls' voices and who gets asked for, more information and not. And, there's a lot of, work to be done. And so even in a school like ours where we moved from having two girls on a robotics team of 12, so one in six, to having next year 12 out of 24, fully 50%. So, we're really aggressive about trying to create those opportunities, but they're still there, and it's still hard, important work in the world. In last year, we had that 10th grade humanities address the issue, and film was made around STEM, girls in STEM in Maine. We have a piece that was came out of our journalism class that's on your website now. And most recently, we got a federal grant that has as a piece of it encouraging girls to get involved in STEM. And we're even, part of it is going to be another student film. We even have a hashtag, Sistering the Beam, which is an engineering term about shoring up a load-bearing beam by attaching a support beam, that it takes us all. And it takes all of us supporting each other to change some of the assumptions that even girls and women in STEM have about themselves.
Michelle, I understand you have a student with you, Maya?
I do. Would you like to speak to
Yes,
Maya?
Please.
You got it.
Hi, this is Maya Schmidt. Maya, what year are you?
I am a sophomore.
Okay. Is this your second year at Baxter Academy?
Yes.
How did you become interested in STEM education?
Oh, I became interested in STEM.
Maya, are you on a speakerphone? And if so, can you pick up the receiver?
I am, sir. Yes, I was. Thank you. So I think I've always wanted to help, to help others, but I never knew I wanted different ways of doing this. So one thing that helped with
Go ahead. One thing that helped.
Thank you. One thing that definitely helped was it started out with wanting to change schools for the sake of other aspects of my education, and the things that I was most passionate about was I wanted to do things with my education. I felt like, I had been learning and they had been showing you information and you learn it and then repeat back. But I wanted to learn how to teach myself. and I wanted to learn how to solve new problems in ways that I had not done before. And okay. those, yes.
Well, Michelle and Maya, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to move on and take some of the calls that are calling in. Interesting, though, Dot, what Maya said, she said she wants to help people, and that's something that you had brought up. One of the ways in which girls don't see some technology fields as directly helping people, it seems as though Maya has moved beyond that. We're going to go to Robin, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Robin. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
My name is Robin, and I just finished my freshman year as a physics major down at the College of William & Mary. So I am very in that whole academic, male-oriented culture right now. And I have been for a while since I've been interested in this since early on in middle school. So I've experienced the sort of need for women to work harder and prove themselves a little bit more because in my experience, you aren't as respected as much as a woman, or you aren't as likely to be respected. And one thing that has helped me a lot now that I'm in college is having a lot of male professors who are really open about the issue of the gender gap, and a lot of female role models as well. But I think that there should be more of a push to understanding how women, and also all minorities in general, can sort of elevate themselves and support themselves in a male-dominated workplace or in any place where they're a minority who's suppressed in some way.
Robin, let me ask you this. What do you hope to do in the world? Where do you hope your physics major will take you?
So right now, because my advisor works with Jefferson Lab with particle physics, that's something that's really relevant to my life. But I'm really dedicated also towards technology and advancing space technology and things like that. not exactly. Sorry, it's a little not connected to the real world, but still very interesting.
So, Carrie, what advice do you have for Robin?
Oh, Robin, I would say seek out women in your field and gain some confidence networking. I think that's something as a scientist that we're not really taught how to do but expected to do is strike up these authentic scientific conversations, but also ask people about their circuitous paths to success. I think I have a lot of students who have this, especially female students, who have this really linear understanding of where their career should take them and where their college experience should take them. But ask the successful women that you can find what failure stories they have and what points in their career and decisions that they made that, you know, they thought maybe weren't right for them at the time actually contributed to their success in their career. So I would say gain a little confidence networking. It's never an easy thing to do, but surround yourself with women in your field, seek them out for advice and to ask them about what got them into the successful place in their career.
Robin, thanks so much for calling in and good luck to you. And we're going to move on. We'll go to Audrey, who's calling from North Yarmouth. Hi, Audrey. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an engineering graduate from the late 70s, and at the time when I went to school, we had about 17% of the student body was women. This college I went to now is about 50%. But still, when I look back in my years, many of the women I graduated with either were very successful but did not have families, and I think that's one of the issues is the bias that has been in the system in supporting high-achieving women with home supports as well. But I also wanted to make an observation about where we really hook kids. And it goes way before middle school. I think the training of early elementary school teachers is really important. A lot of the focus has always been on language arts and math, and many teachers are not very confident about their science skills. And I think that's something that we still need to address, not just in Maine, but everywhere.
Audrey, let me ask you, did you have a career? Have you had a career as an engineer, and have you stuck with it?
Not at this time, no. I had some family that I issues that I needed to attend to, and juggling two professional careers became a bit challenging in our household. But I'm very supportive of any kind of math or science education, not only just for girls, but also for boys in our school systems in Maine.
Well, let me ask our panel this, and let me ask you this, Dot McLean, because we also have a similar email. Is this an issue that many technology fields have not sort of caught up with other professions in terms, and not just women's issues, but in terms of flexible work, you know, a flexible workplace, acknowledgement that people may need to take time off to deal with family issues? Is there a cultural gap there?
Yeah, it's a huge issue, and it's really across the occupations, but particularly apparent in the STEM occupations, because they often take a lot of graduate work or dedication or building a career. So the same time that a woman is trying to build her career are the prime times for her to be having her children and her family if she chooses to have that. And our society just does a terrible job of supporting families. We don't have good paid leave. We don't have good parental leave. And as advanced as we might be, we're not equal yet. If there's a choice between a man or a woman having to take care of a child, it's usually the woman's job still. So we don't have enough support for families, and it's hurting women, it's hurting families, it's hurting everybody.
But, and, you know, this is the case in other fields. I mean, lawyers, yes, and doctors. And why is it different for, I mean, these are also highly intensive careers that take a lot of education. Why is it different in engineering?
It's not different. I think it's hard for any job that takes, that expects 50 to 60 hour work weeks. Everybody in the United States works too hard, works too long. But it's particularly hard on people that have families. So anything that's not your old 9-to-5 or 8-to-5 job is putting a hardship on women that have families. So it puts her in a position where she may have to decide whether she wants to have a high power career or does she want to have a family, because she doesn't get enough support to do both. A lot of women manage it. It's not easy. Sometimes they do it in cycles where they'll take some time out of the workforce and then they get penalized for that because they're out of the workforce, and then they come back into it and they're behind a little, and nobody takes into account that they've been out there taking care of their children. So it's a difficult situation for our society. It's something we have to solve for all careers for women, but particularly for those that are so demanding of their time that puts them in a tough spot that they feel they have to choose.
In other countries where there are different kinds of family leave law, the Scandinavian countries, for example, much of Europe, do we see more women in the sciences?
Yes, you see more women in everything, in government and sciences and anywhere, because they do have the support of the government so that they can have children, they can have a family, it's expected, and they're not penalized for it.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Audrey. We have a related email. Dorothy wrote a very long email, and so I'm going to summarize it. But she talked about this field, this issue, and she said that she's frustrated that often panel discussions on this issue talk about this, as it says, panels, I hope not yours, notoriously devolve into advice on child care assistance. And even though time and time again studies have shown this is a minority issue about why women leave engineering. But some of her other points are that our general culture in this country of anti-intellectualism undermines efforts to recruit young people to science. Do you find that with Maine Maritime Academy, Elizabeth?
I think that in our culture, we're really we're trying to attract students to a hands-on education, one that really engages them, so and hooks them in that different way. And so I'm trying to think about how that, in terms of anti-intellectual, I don't believe so. It's looking at that there are so many different learning styles and trying to engage the student that learns best by hands-on doing and sees that connection to whatever they're learning about in the classroom and the lectures.
That's fine. What about you? I'll have Carrie weigh in. Do you feel as though sort of this general attitude of skepticism about science has infected the students that you have in high school and college?
I think that's pervasive. I think another issue is encouraging intellectual risk-taking for boys but not for girls. We have all of these examples of people like Bill Gates, who dropped out of college and became highly successful in the field. We don't really have that narrative spoken about women. And I think that narrative is out there and we need to share it. But I think that, you know, the encouragement of intellectual risk taking for men, and that you can fail, and failure is good because it can lead to this highly creative, highly successful career. That's around for men, but not for women.
Interesting. Well, we do have to take another short break. When we return, more of our conversation about women and girls in science, technology, engineering, and math. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do St. Joseph's College Online MBA, emphasizing critical thinking, social responsibility, and leadership. More at sjcmba.com. Sweetser, offering mental health first aid classes in several Maine locations. Course description and class schedule at sweetser.org. And the DePonte String Quartet, performing at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Brunswick, May 22nd. Tickets at deponte.org.
Next time on Living on Earth, how to pitch climate change and other environmental challenges to galvanize conservatives to action.
Conservatives are not inherently anti-environmental so much as they are chronically rejecting the liberal tone of the prevailing environmental discourse.
I'm Steve Kerwin, and Reframing the Debate, that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Join us for Living on Earth Sunday morning at 7 o'clock right here on the stations of Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the struggles women and girls face in STEM fields. We have three distinguished women on our panel here today, Dr. Carrie Whitaker, Dr. Dot McLean, and Dr. Elizabeth True. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from one of our favorite people here at Maine Calling, Skylar Bayer up at UMaine at the Darling Marine Center. Skylar writes, "One of my biggest subtle sexism issues as a scientist is having an idea, thought, or comment I share in a setting with male scientists and it being ignored until a man says exactly the same thing. So many of my female scientist friends have this same problem over and over again. What do the speakers have for suggestions about how to deal with these kinds of microaggressions? Because they're so subtle, they can be hard to tackle head on and make progress without getting really frustrated." Carrie, I'm going to put that one on you.
I think that's called mansplaining. I've heard it called that. I think women have a harder time advocating for themselves, especially in STEM careers, and advocating for their own ideas. And that's something that we can teach young women. I feel strongly about that. I'm lucky enough to work at Coastal Studies for Girls, which is a science and leadership school. And I work with these really amazing colleagues, Kate Kairos, Becca Turkowitz, that alongside teaching hands-on science, teach about authenticity, about vulnerability, about conflict resolution, about having fierce conversations. And I think having those disciplines side by side allows students to enter into STEM fields with the sense of empowerment and authenticity and able to advocate for themselves.
Would you recommend to Skylar, if she's in a room and this happens, to say, John, that was a terrific suggestion. It sounds exactly like what I suggested 10 minutes ago. I mean, is that?
Absolutely. I think that's the fierce conversation and that we need to have is speaking up for ourselves. And it's not easy, but I think that's something that can be cultivated in young students. So teaching that kind of coping mechanism, those tools alongside with some rigorous scientific skills can be really beneficial.
Okay, we're headed to Winthrop and Jenny. Hi, Jenny. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, hi. I appreciate you taking my call. I've been a programmer in information technology for nearly 40 years. And when I first started, it was interesting because there were so many more of my fellow girls in my classes. And to hear that there aren't as many girls now is just kind of sad to me. But and there's still a lot of women my age who are doing this kind of work. But there's not a lot of young ones coming up. So I'm very happy about this kind of encouragement. I'm just sad it's necessary. But what I was calling to say predominantly was, I think it's important that it not just be STEM, that STEAM be the acronym, because the letter A stands for the arts. I think we all know the
wonderful connection, the miraculous sometimes connection between math and music. And it's also really good with problem solving. You know, the reason that we love our work, speaking as a programmer, I mean, this is what we're helping people do their jobs, our business clients or whoever else that we're working with. We help them do their jobs better. And the idea that first that you're, that this is a service business. It's not just about bits and bytes. There are human beings involved here. And I love the caller earlier who was talking about trying to help people, that that's why she went into the sciences. But also when it comes to problem solving, the broader your experiences across the spectrum, the more you bring to bear on problem solving. And that's what science is and math and, well, I don't, well, the math.
That's right. Well, I'm going to let my guest in Bangor weigh in. Dot, thoughts?
Well, personally, I'm not a big fan of the STEAM acronym, because not because I don't believe that art is inherent in math and technology and so forth. It absolutely is. They're intertwined. I just feel that it sort of dilutes out the conversation when you're trying to really focus on the STEM portion that that also includes the art. So I'm not a big fan of that. But I think... you know, she was talking about, I've lost my train of thought now, the other point she was making about thinking. And this is one of the things that if you look at colleges, the way they teach some of the engineering and the computing in particular is that there's been some criticism that they focus so much on logical thinking that they don't look at critical thinking. And that there's so much curriculum that these women don't have, or anybody that studies these courses, doesn't have time to take some of the humanities and the languages, these other things that make you a complete thinker and that you need to bring to the problems in the STEM occupation. So I think that that's an oversight that colleges have made the curriculum so hard and so focused that you need to include more courses besides just the hard sciences, and you need to develop that critical thinker.
Jennifer, this is Elizabeth. We had a very successful seminar this fall at Maine Maritime on Moby Dick, and it was across the curriculum. So we had engineers and architects and marine biologists all looking at Moby Dick from their perspective of their discipline, and then it culminated with projects that ranged from looking at the history of slavery in the whaling industry, to recreating the boat, to recreating some historical projects. And it really, the students were in it were just so engaged, and they hadn't looked at humanities in that way before and saw how everything is intertwined. So as Dot said, we need to do a good job of integrating the humanities in with the sciences, but I too would disagree with focusing on STEAM. We still need to focus on STEM.
All right. Well, Jenny, thanks for your call. I really appreciate it. We're going to move on to Marcel, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Marcel. Go ahead.
This is Martha.
Oh, Martha. I'm sorry.
Me?
Yeah.
Yep. No problem. Hey, I'm a senior scientist and have been for almost all my life. I started out knowing I wanted to be in science when I was like 3 or 4 years old, sitting by the ocean. I grew up in Cundy's Harbor. And one of the problems that I encountered, now my high school years were during the 70s, is at Brunswick High, you had to be voc tech or industrial arts, secretarial arts, or college prep. And I wanted to do half industrial arts and half college prep, and they wouldn't let me. And that's when I found that Cuddy's Harbor actually paid, you know, about $1,000, which is what they would pay to Brunswick High to take me to go to any of the other private schools. So I went to an interdisciplinary school in Freeport called Collinsbrook, where it helped blossom my, you know, not being put down. And from there, went to College of the Atlantic. And then from there, went to graduate school, where I did 7 graduate semesters in math. So I've had experience in all 4 aspects of STEM. But one of the things that harkens back really early, and this has been brought up, is the problem with females stepping up for themselves. And I got into a massive argument in 4th grade regarding set theory and whether the grains of sand on a beach were finite or infinite. And I said finite. You just have to mark out a square mile by cube. And even though it's impossible to count them in a second,
that number would be limited. And I almost got sent home to school for the day because the book said that the grains of sand of beach are infinite. Well, of course, they're constantly dissolving, but if you pick an instant in time. But I didn't get any encouragement except for from one of the other, quote, brainy kids.
Martha, are you discouraged to hear that things haven't come further in your lifetime?
Oh, absolutely. I'm in my 50s. I have a teenage daughter, and I cannot get a job. And part of that is discrimination, which is ageism, but part of that is being female. I worked on counterterrorism pre, during, and post 9/11. And I was considered the senior epidemiologist. The Centers for Disease Control, who funded me, asked me to train other federal agencies on counterterrorism regarding chemicals, explosive events, and nuclear weapons. And that actually I added to my own job listing, cyber terrorism. And, of course, this was back before 2001. And I went to interview with the Maine CDC, where I had worked for 10 years, and I wasn't even called back for a second interview. Mm. I was told my skills were too old.
I so appreciate you calling in. We're almost out of time. We have a bunch of calls, so I'm going to move on. I'm going to move on to Megan in Biddeford. Hi, Megan. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hi. I no doubt about it, there's an issue. My mother, who's in her 50s, recently was embattled in an issue where a younger, inexperienced male had been promoted over two of her female, very experienced leadership skills in their mid-50s, and he was chosen over them. Having said that, I grew up, I went to UNE. I graduated pre-med last year, where almost all of my professors in the STEM field, they were female. And we were all highly encouraged as females. The majority of the students were females. We were all in leadership roles, mostly over the men. And but I do want to mention, aren't we seeing that a lot of boys and men in school are not responding properly to standardized education? And shouldn't we be really focusing, I think, more on specialized education and in our primary schools and our, you know, in our high schools?
Well, Megan, I think you're pointing to two of Carrie Whitaker's points. One, the importance of mentors, and two, the importance of thinking about education differently. Right, Carrie?
Yeah, I would definitely say education can be a powerful way of reframing science and getting women involved in really specific, nuanced, engaging, exciting scientific discourse. I encourage all of my students to read the primary literature, high school and undergraduates. I think that's, you know, for me, a light was turned on when I realized that science was a conversation. It wasn't a list of facts. It was about finding interesting questions, about developing creative ways to answer those questions. And I think this primary scientific literature, it has it there, that discourse. And it's really empowering even for my high school students to be able to wade through the jargon and figure out what those questions are and how they can engage with it. I think that's one way to really reframe science as a collaborative act, doing science as idea sharing and requiring really critical thinking and not just, a list of facts. And I think that can be done in through education.
Megan, thanks so much for your call. I remember being on a story with some scientists and a biologist, and one saying to me, what really appealed to her about biology is the idea that she might find something or figure out something that nobody had ever found or figured out before. And I thought to myself, if I had heard that when I was 13 or 14, that might have been a life-changing thing to hear.
It's
so exciting and so empowering. I'm going to move on to Ben, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Ben. Go ahead.
Yes, I think it's important to really look at the choices that women, when they're given the freedom to make choices, make with regards to the STEM field. So if you look at countries where women are less equal, like Turkey, India, Bangladesh, things like that, they actually have a significantly higher amount of women in the STEM field than countries that are more egalitarian, like Sweden, Norway, Iceland, Finland. So I think rather than saying there's some sort of conspiracy against women in the STEM field, in fact, a recent study in Cornell found women are two times more likely to get faculty-related jobs in the STEM field than men. It comes down to just simply choices on an aggregate that women make. Of course, there's women that are highly interested in working in, you know, engineering and stuff, but just on aggregate, I think.
Ben, why do you think women are making those choices here in the U.S.?
I think a number of them are biological. Women tend to work in fields, again, this is on aggregate, there's obviously outliers to this, that are more social, that involve more interaction, whereas men are more, again, don't mind that as much, and they're more independent in that sense, and are less looking for social interaction.
Okay, Dot, I'm going to toss this up to you.
Okay, well, my first comment would be is that I don't think anybody thinks there's a conspiracy to keep women out of STEM. I think that it's our society and the way our culture presents these occupations to women that they don't see themselves in these roles. So when people talk about, well, women just don't choose to do this, it's not as if they're in a vacuum and have all choices open to them with all possibilities of those choices, how they will come out and make their choices. It's they're in a situation where they have been for generations given limited choices. They, you know, you've always got your rebels. I mean, there's always women who've been successful in the STEM fields in any generation. But if you don't see somebody that looks like you, if you don't hear that you can have a rewarding, socially relevant career, you can have a family, you can do this, if you don't hear those things as options for you, then how much choice do you really have?
All right. Well, Ben, thanks for your call. And that's going to have to be the last call, unfortunately. We had such a robust conversation today and so many people. I apologize for leaving you on the line. Thank you very much, Dr. Dot McLean, on the National Board of Director for the American Association of University Women. Dr. Carrie Whitaker teaches at Bates College and Coastal Studies for Girls in Freeport. She's a PhD in oceanography. Dr. Elizabeth True is Vice President of Student Affairs at Maine Maritime Academy. Nikki Shields ran the board today, and Hadley Britt and Allison Stewart answered your calls. We'd like to thank Hadley and Allison for working with us this week, and we wish them the best of luck as they prepare to head off to college in the fall. We had additional help from Rich Tozier. Thank you, Rich. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 7. The rest of the week, we're rebroadcast at 8 on Fridays at 7. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. And before we go today, a special note of thanks to MPBN colleague Jean Coffin. She is retiring today after 35 years of service to listeners and watchers of Maine Public Broadcasting. Anyone who's visited our Portland offices has met Jean. She's the keeper of the sign-in log, as well as many other things. Jean, it won't be the same without you. Thank you for being our friend and colleague, and we hope you come back and visit us often. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.